Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
Hey, 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 Leland Conway here, the Disruption Zone podcast. Got a great guest today. It's Louisville Metro Councilman Anthony Piacentini trying to talk about how we get our leaders talking about a way out of this morass. Look, we're all on board with the shelter in place for a couple of weeks, but what's the end game here? What's the exit strategy? What are the benchmarks that get us out of this situation? By the way, if I were a politician running for office right now, I would quit kissing babies and immediately start handing out rolls of toilet paper. I think I would win in a landslide. Couple things. The market keeps crashing. It'll crash one day and then go up the next day, and it's an up and down thing. And I'm telling you right now that this is going to keep happening until our leaders, and that's President Trump included, start talking about an exit strategy from this shutdown. What are the benchmarks for success? When will we start transitioning to a plan that allows younger, healthier people to get back to work and to life? The politicians have this silly notion that you can turn businesses off and then turn it back on again, just like your car's engine, but that's not the case. With governments asking small businesses to close their doors, but to keep paying idled workers, with inventory not moving off the shelves, with restaurants closing most of their options, there's food spoilage, but their lights are on, the water is on, the mortgage and leases still do, but the money's not coming in. The politicians think that these businesses all can sort of magically have the capital to just turn their business back on in 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 3 months, whatever, however long this is supposed to be. That's not true. Now, maybe if there was a concrete timeline or at least a set of benchmarks to show that we're moving toward being back online, they could figure out a way to scrape through. Like if we said, look, once we get testing capacity up, we're going to do mandatory testing for all employers that open their business once a week for every employee. And then you can go back and open up. Then once we get hospital beds to the amount we're going to need for what we expect this disease to do, then you can start letting people who are a little bit older out. And once we get to the downside of the bell curve, then we start letting people who are immunocompromised out. Now, I don't mean let because I don't want any of this to be mandatory, but those would be the recommendations. But if you gave those benchmarks, people would have a lot more hope as to what is on the other side of what's going on here. The reality is that each additional week of uncertainty is edging us closer to total economic destruction, such as I believe this country has never seen before. And I'm not minimizing the virus or the death that it's certainly going to bring to a few of the most vulnerable among us. But what good will it do to shut down the economy to save a few thousand lives when no one has the means to take care of themselves when this is over? Believe me, the coming avoidable economic calamity is going to kill far more people than this virus was ever capable of. All right, to our guest. Joining me now is Councilman Anthony Piacentini, Louisville Metro Councilman, as we continue to work our way through the coronavirus reaction. And Councilman, you and I have been having some conversations. There's some state legislators, I think, that are starting to wake up to this. The Wall Street Journal finally wrote a piece about this, and it's the idea that we need to shift our thinking. I think most of us are on board with a couple or 3 weeks of kind of a nationwide voluntary shutdown where we all sort of self-quarantine ourselves except for what we need and absolutely have to have. But then after that, we have to start thinking about what's the exit plan from this and how do we go from that to getting the economy back up and running? Because it seems as though some people think that we can just turn the economy back on like a car engine after having let it sit in the garage overnight. And that's exactly the opposite of how economics would work. And we need more people like yourself talking about the exit strategy. You wrote a piece on social media about how we need to be thinking forward and getting back to work. And the most important point I think you made, Councilman, was that we shouldn't be looking at this battle as if we were going to try to defeat the virus, but rather how quickly can we get our hotel or our hospital capacity up so we can manage the sick and then get healthy people back to work.
Yeah, thanks, Leland. Yeah, that's exactly it, right? I mean, we don't shut down the economy to defeat diseases. It is tragic, it is terrible, but people die every year of diseases that, frankly, if we all stayed home, are preventable.
Right.
Okay. Any virus is a communicable disease that is that you spread infection through human contact. This social distancing thing applies to any virus, right? That has been around since the dawn of time.
Right.
So what we really are, so when it makes me nervous when leaders, politicians from, and this is from the president on down to every governor, says things like, we're going to beat this virus. No, the virus will be here for the rest of our lives, right?
Right.
What we will eventually do is create a vaccine and, you know, we will prevent most of it and we'll get it so it's manageable. What we are really doing, what we are really nervous about is the overwhelming of the hospital system, right? Of the healthcare system, where imagine a scenario that a city has 100 ventilators and 100 hospital beds. And 200 people show up, that if each of them had a ventilator and a hospital bed, they could be cured.
Right.
But because you don't have them, you literally would have to say to 100, 100 of the 200 people, go home and die.
Right.
I'm sorry, we couldn't treat you. So that's the scenario we're avoiding, that Italy and some countries did experience for a period of time. So,
right.
And that is what, you know, I think the whole community, right, the whole country could say, yes, I don't want that.
Right.
Right. Where I can't save a life simply because I have one ventilator for two people. Okay. So what we need to be doing is talking about, this is an equation.
Right.
It's capacity versus growth of the disease. And at some point, there will be a trajectory of the disease compared to capacity where you can say, we need to start reopening, because to your point, healthy people and low risk people need to pay, need to be productive members of society and pay for all of this.
Right.
Right? I mean, right. You know, and so we've done something where even those that are very low risk, that are in industries and in areas where they may be able to work in a modified way, in a safe, modified way, they can't do anything at this point. And you drag this out more than 2 weeks, 3 weeks, okay, you go to a month, 2 months, you're now transitioning from recession to depression.
Right.
And poverty has a mortality rate.
Yeah. And so I've been arguing the same thing, that if we're not careful, the response to the disease will kill more people than the disease ever planned on killing.
Right. And here's the other thing. Here's the other thing. And this is for the president and our governor. And so this is, you know, look, everybody wants to take politics out of it. The president's Republican. My governor is a Democrat. I really don't care. The point is that they need to be more transparent about that equation. And quite frankly, what makes me nervous is they don't even have it yet.
Right.
But that's what's really scary. But they need to be transparent once and design it as quickly as possible and talk about the progress toward it. Because the lack of it, of that transparency in that equation, means that we are at the whim and fancy of two people, at least in Kentucky, the president and the governor.
Right.
And because they feel like, oh, we need to stop this. Oh, we're out of control. Oh, we need to, they feel it, ergo they're doing it.
Right.
Right. They need to get an epidemiologist or some in the room, the hospital association, the medical association in the room. They're, again, they have them there in the control center, but where is the equation? Where is the transparency on how the decision is made? And then what's the exit strategy?
Right.
Right. So do we do a partial reopening of the economy of certain businesses with new guidelines? Is it going to be, and how will that look? Which ones are the least risky versus the most risky? So we can see which ones would reopen first, second, third, fourth. It's almost like tiers. If they're not designing that,
right,
you know, this is Iraq,
right?
Right. This is, you know, we run in there and we want to do something. You're ready, fire, aim, right?
Right.
We run in there and we go do something. And it's, what does victory actually look like?
Yeah.
Right? Is it achievable?
Right.
You know,
I don't think, because here's what I want to, this is like how I would, if I was talking to somebody right now, like a president or the governor, I'd be like, look, here's what you got to do. Right now, your main focus should be ramping up hospital beds and equipment. That should be your main focus.
Right.
In 3 weeks, you need to basically go back and say, look, all right, and you need to tell people this all along. In 3 weeks, we're going to reopen the state of Kentucky, and we're going to go back to work. The healthy people, young, healthy people are going to go back to work. We're going to get the testing capacity up, and as soon as all those tests are out, We're going to make sure every company has the ability to test people. They're going to take the test weekly, and we're going to know that the workers that are in there are not sick with this virus. They're going to take this test weekly, and we're going to go back to work. The elderly people and the people with immunocompromise are going to ask you to stay home until we get through this. And do that, and then I like the idea of the stages of businesses, but to start to roll that back out. If you don't do that, and if you don't start communicating that to the people of Kentucky and every state in America, if the governors and the people in charge don't start communicating that, the longer we do that, exactly what you said is going to happen. It's going to be economic devastation such as this country has never seen, perhaps even worse than the Great Depression.
Right. And here's the other crazy, here's the other scenario that, so first of all, if they were more transparent with that, I would contend, and I said this in my article, more people would do more to help, right? Because we would all be, we could see the goal, right? Hey, everybody, we're ahead of target. Great job today. Here's where it is. Here's where the target is. All right, keep it up. And we might even be able to reopen early. Or, hey, folks, I'm sorry. The numbers are bad today, right? We're a little beyond what we thought we would be now. Might have to push back 3 more days because of that. You know, so let's buckle down, folks. You know, we would have more buy-in with that visibility.
Right.
What really may happen and where it really gets crazy. So let's say we go a month. We go past spring break, and that gets to about a month of shutdown for Kentucky. The week after spring break would be a month. Once we get there, if we don't have visibility, all right, people are going to, somebody's going to do something, right? Somebody's going to violate some rule.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Maybe a restaurant allows somebody to sit down, right? instead of just take out. And I'm serious.
Right, right. Right there.
Maybe a barber starts cutting hair again, right? Are we going to arrest them? Right? Are we going to send the National Guard in?
Right.
For somebody that needs to make a living?
Right.
Right? And who in reality is really low risk. I mean, what are we going to do at that point? But again, we can now we don't do it now because the default position for Americans is law abiding, right? So, you know, somebody that has the authority tells us don't do it. Even if I wholeheartedly disagree, it's legal. I follow, right? That's what we do. And that's a good thing that keeps society working. But at some point we do not infringe upon our freedoms just because there's a scary disease out there, right? Infringing upon freedoms is a huge deal and needs to be done in an extremely limited way and for extremely specific purpose.
Yeah, and I fear for the future now that we, because I feel like the media bears a lot of responsibility for the panic. You know, I'm not going to subscribe to the fact that this situation is Trump's fault, nor am I going to subscribe to the fact that this situation is the media's fault. But what we do have is a media that's been trying to take down one particular president in multiple ways, and I think they found a way they can do it. I think they are holding America hostage to a very tightly prescribed set of reactions that we must have to this virus. And if you vary from that, there's going to be hell to pay from the media, and I think we see that daily. My other concern, in addition to everything you just pointed out, because I think you're right about us coming to a point where people are going to start to defy, or maybe that's not the best word when it comes to the government, not comply. That's going to happen. But I think what we're going to see also is the longer this drags out with no discussed end in sight, because what I'm not hearing is leaders talking about the end game here. Like you said, the mistake is the end game that they're talking about is defeating the disease. And we have to be honest with people that we're not going to defeat this, maybe ever. This is just a new form of the flu, and it's never going to be defeated. We'll probably have a vaccine in a couple of years that will slow it down. We may have some drugs that right now look promising to be able to sort of mitigate it. But it's just like the flu. It's never going to actually completely go away. It's with us here. We can't completely defeat it. So we have to change that language. But if we don't start talking about the exit strategy, here's the next step. I went to the grocery store this morning. They had a security guard there. First time I've ever seen one in that particular grocery store. In about 3 weeks, when people who live paycheck to paycheck, working hourly, start to lose the ability to pay their rent, start to lose the ability to purchase the goods that they need, can't get the goods that they need because somebody, some joker showing up at 7 o'clock in the morning and buying everything off the shelf, there's going to be violence. There's going to be unrest. Crime is going to start to go up. These are going to be the consequences very quickly if there isn't sort of an articulated vision for how we're supposed to go.
That's right. And so I'll tell you a crazy sort of specific story. So the Kroger distribution center, so, you know, I don't know how many people know how food is actually transported, but you know, as food gets into its completed form, right, and you have either canned food or fresh food or whatever, before it goes to your grocery store, it goes to a local distribution center for that grocery store. So the Kroger distribution center for Louisville is in my district. It's in District 19.
Right.
And I work right down the street from it. I was leaving work the day they closed down my office a couple of days ago, and I took a video because I have never seen that many trucks. I mean, trucks line up there every day, but at the particular time of day that I was leaving, I've never seen trucks lined up. Then they're usually lined up in the morning, in the afternoon, it dies down. 5 p.m. lineup of trucks trying to get into the distribution center, which then goes to the stores, right? So I just took a video of it and I posted it on my Twitter feed. And that, I mean, look, I am one of 26 council members in the city of Louisville. I'm not a national figure. I don't have that many followers on Twitter. That tweet has over 1,300 likes and almost 200 retweets. And I don't have that many followers.
Right, right.
So because people are desperate to share information about certainty and normalcy.
Right.
Right, stability.
Right.
They want to see, right, oh, yeah, the trucks are still rolling, right? And all that
stuff. So why aren't our leaders, besides you, why are our leaders not talking about that is the end goal? Look, I know they can't promise us that on April 15th we're reopened for business, but they can at least say, here's a set of benchmarks that if we reach these,
right,
we can reopen on April 15th. And then if we don't reach those benchmarks, they can come back to us and say, guys, got to tighten it up a little bit here, got to tighten it up a little bit there, and then we can do it by the 30th. But that communication of giving us hope as people that on the 30th we'll have some sense of normalcy and we can start looking for jobs again.
You know what it is? Politicians want to look like they're doing something.
Right.
Right. And that gets politicians into a lot of trouble, right? Because sometimes politicians shouldn't do anything, right?
Right.
And I'm not speaking about this scenario, but there's a lot of times in politicians, you know, we can't solve everybody's problems, but people come to politicians. My email and phone blow up under normal circumstances at my office regarding people's problems. And,
right,
and sometimes you just got to say, I'm sorry, I can't solve your problem. It's not my job. It's not the government's job to solve your problems. Okay.
Right.
And here's another perfect example. Bashir and Trump and everybody wants to look like they're doing something.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So what do they want to do? They're starting to shut down. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to do this other thing. It is not sexy and it is not politically expedient to start getting into conversations about budgets, the economy, because people will say, who cares about the economy? People's lives are on the line.
Right.
People die every day, and it's a horrible thing. And you know, we can all sit here and lament why people die and preventable disease and all this fun stuff, and it's terrible and tragic, right? But if you think it's the governor's job to save everybody's life,
right,
that's not true.
Right.
Right. That's not true. He is simply trying to set up a set of legal circumstances within the state so that the state can function properly. And again, that's the equation, right? Hospital capacity versus speed of the disease versus ability to cure, et cetera, right? His job is not to save every life or to infringe on other freedoms, right? In order to, with the excuse of, well, we need to beat the disease. Well, if even one person dies, no, I'm sorry.
Right.
We don't behave like that. 30,000 people a year die from, you know, car accidents or whatever. I mean, I could quote stats after stats about preventable issues that people die from every day. Violence, right? All kinds of things. If we locked everybody in their houses every day, there'd be almost no violence.
Right.
Other than domestic, right? So to micromanage the entirety of a state or a federal economy based off of that is not enough.
Right.
So again, that's why we need to be clear. What is the goal? And to your point, I wouldn't give a date. I agree with you. If the governor would be mistaken to give a date,
right,
it should be a set of numbers and circumstances, benchmarks,
yeah,
that we have to hit to reopen.
I mean, you could say be as simple as this. Once we reach the capacity to test everyone that needs to be tested, and so that every employer can test every employee, we're going to go ahead and open back up and allow it. And there's going to be mandatory weekly testing of every employee and every business that's open. And we're also going to make sure that the people that are working are between the ages of, say, 20 and 50, okay? Everybody else stay home for a little while. That's going to be 2 weeks of that. Then after that, we're going to be able to, you know, potentially roll out this or this or this. It's just laying out that plan. And I think going back to what you said earlier about politicians, right? It's not sexy. Politicians right now are running scared. They're scared of the media. And they're scared of a couple of things. I think a lot of them, and I'll say this about our governor, even though he's a Democrat and I'm not a Democrat by any way, shape, or form, I think his heart's in the right place. I think he really wants to protect Kentuckians.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more.
But yeah. But I think also most politicians are not only that is their big concern, but they're also concerned, how's the media going to react to what I do? And that's why constant communication, constant playing, the hope aspect of this, it just feels like a lot of people are forgetting the hope aspect of this. And that's where people mm-hmm. are going to get a lot more edgy, and then we're going to start to have problems.
Yeah, and look, the mayor, like, for example, the mayor, and to be clear, Mayor Fisher has no control of this whatsoever. These are all his. He has no ability to shut things down. Where he's reacting to the governor, right? He's putting things like, hey, Lift Up Lou, right?
Right,
which is this initiative for people to inject some hope into the conversation, and that's good. Look, he's reacting as much as he can on a city level.
Right.
But to your point, on the bigger scale, the hope is going to be generated by, hey, we've refabricated the Ford plant to make ventilators.
Right.
We have, right. You know, my brother actually, crazy enough, works for one of the companies, and he's an engineer at one of their plants that manufactures these tests. And that one of the tests that got approved last Friday by the FDA, so they're cranking it out like crazy.
Nice.
Talk about how many numbers are coming off that line every day. Can somebody else open up their line to help out, right, manufacturing-wise? You know, this is the stuff that we need to see for hope. You know, there's talk about some of these drugs and all that stuff. I don't know if that's real or not. And the other thing about reopening, so you're talking about like, hey, this is what we're going to do once we get testing in this capacity and this thing. How about partial reopenings? For example, all right, listen, restaurants, you can reopen tables, minimum 10 right. foot of distance. Booths
right.
can't be back to back. So a restaurant can open at 50% capacity. Yeah, it's not 100% yet. Right. But it gives them the social distance. It gives them some, you know, with a cleaning protocol.
Right.
Right. And a testing protocol. But it gives them the circumstances of which, in a lower risk environment than we've had, you know, 50% capacity is better than zero.
Right.
Because what's going to happen? They can adjust their business model for that related to overhead and all that stuff. But in a month, 2 months, these restaurants got to pay rent,
yeah.
overhead,
yeah.
insurance, right? That those bills don't go away,
right?
Right, because they're not serving food, and then you have the whole wait staff. I mean, city alone laid off 40,000 wait staff almost instantaneously.
Wow, that's yeah. insane. That is insane.
So,
and all of those 40,000 people have got nothing except to be able to wait on a government check, and that
right,
is going to be sparse
for unemployment.
Yeah, and I've been in that position where I was worked in food service when I was in college. And I know that, you know, those people do not have a bunch of cash laid up. They don't have 401k retirement plans that they can, unfortunately, have to raid. They don't have backup systems in place because a lot of them are young college students or maybe a little more than that. And they just don't have a backup plan. And, you know, yeah. we can send them $1,200 if you want, but you send them $1,200 every 2 or 3 months from the government, that's not going to help them survive.
Well, And here's something that, again, most politicians don't understand, and this is the curse of being a politician with an economics degree. There's a well-known economic theory, and I wouldn't call it a theory, it's almost a rule at this point, related to tax cuts.
Right.
You can do temporary or permanent, right? Mm-hmm. So a temporary tax cut is like, hey, we're going to give you a tax holiday for this period of time, or a thing like this rebate, $1,200 a person or whatever it is. That's essentially call that a short-term tax cut. That's essentially what it is, right?
Right.
Versus saying, hey, we're going to permanent tax cut. We're going to drop everybody's rate by 2%, permanent tax cut. When you do a permanent tax cut, it is an economic stimulus because people spend related to their normal spending patterns. Every dollar that they get in on a permanent basis, they spend about 98 cents of it.
Right.
Save 2 cents.
Right.
When you do it temporarily, the numbers are like 50% savings because people
wow.
on a temporary basis hoard.
Yeah.
When the government, when the federal, again, it sounds really good. We give everybody $1,200 per person, they're going to hoard it.
Yeah.
They will not spend it. They will hoard it because
well, and they don't right now. They don't have to because there's no toilet paper available. They've probably already stocked up on everything else. So they'll get the $1,200. Right. Maybe it'll help some people with, you know, the standing bills that they have, like say electric and mortgage and rent and stuff. But other than that, you're absolutely right. If you give a household $6,000 because they got four or five kids, they're going to end up just sitting on it. I mean, they can't go on vacation with it. You know,
that's right. That's right. So this whole concept of what a bailout, stimulus, whatever looks like it's theory. It's not true, right? If you just inject money into the economy, but people can't even move from my house to the next person's house because we're on some kind of lockdown, right. Who cares how much money you give me at that point, right?
You'd be better off telling the banks that we're going to give you a bailout in a year. Right now, suspend all mortgage payments for a year. Just suspend them. Don't even, you know what I mean? You'd be better off doing that.
Maybe.
And I'm not saying that's something I would support. I wouldn't in any way, shape, or form. I'm just saying in terms of if you really got to tell people you're going to sit still for the next 3-4 months until we defeat this disease or whatever, their standing bills are going to continue. So if you really if you really are trying to say, because they, like you said, they can't go anywhere. And again, I'm not supporting doing that. I'm just saying you'd be almost better off to tell the banks, hey, and the property owners, hey, we'll bail you out in a year, but do not charge rent, do not charge a mortgage, and just give everybody a reprieve for 6 months until we beat this, because it's not going to do anything. I mean, again, I want to be very clear. I'm not advocating that policy. I'm just,
of course,
you know, I'm just making a point.
But again, it all comes back to now we need people talking about capacity for testing in hospitals, capacity for the healthcare system,
yes.
versus, you know, what circumstances, because that will, all of these problems get solved almost instantaneously. People know how long they have to save for, how much they need to prepare. People will stop running on Kroger because they'll be like, oh, I've got enough toilet paper to last a couple weeks, right?
Right.
You know, so these things will solve themselves with the equation and the visibility into it to giving people the certainty and stability that society will return.
Well, that's exactly it. I think most Americans probably have enough toilet paper to last 2 weeks. If they know that they stay home for 2 weeks and these benchmarks are met, and they will be if they stay home, they won't need to go out and buy toilet paper.
That's right.
You don't have to do it.
No, that's exactly right. But we need to demand it of the executive branch of every state and the federal government. I don't care. That's regardless, Democrat, Republican.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter about political party. We need this visibility. They need to be clear about it. And it needs to be state by state, too.
Well, I want to ask this right now. I want to ask anybody who's listening to this podcast, and we know that like literally thousands download it every week. Anybody who's listening to this podcast, please share it with your local legislator. We need these conversations to start happening in Frankfurt so that even if the pressure has to come from the bottom, because I honestly do believe that Governor Beshear is trying to do the right thing. I just think that he is overwhelmed right now like every other governor in America. And so we need to start chirping a little bit to say, hey, here's a way we need to start thinking about this strategically long term. And so I want to encourage everybody who listens to this, please share it with your local legislator and let's get people talking. I mean, I'm not saying that myself or you, Councilman Piagentini, have the exact right equation of solutions, but I know we're right to talk about the future.
Oh, yeah. And you're right. We need the people to give the politicians the strength, because you're right. I mean, look, and I'm not blaming politicians, not blaming the media. Hell, I'm a politician and I work closely with the media. But we need to be less afraid and give them the strength to think, okay, I know this is an emotional time, but now we need to start talking about the business side of this,
right?
And not businesses for dollars and cents and business real, but like, what are the numbers equation? How do we plan, create a target and drive to that target? Again, it's not sexy. But they need to know that that's what we want to see.
Right.
There's an increasing group of people, right? The majority of people want to see that, so that we can aim toward it and hit it together.
Exactly. Councilman Anthony Piagentini, I'm glad you wrote what you wrote. Thank you for being willing to come on and chat with us. And I think, like I said, if people can share this podcast with their local legislator, their local councilman, their local state representative, and we can start getting people having these conversations, and we can turn this thing around.
Great. Thanks very much.
All right. Have a great day. All right. A couple of tidbits of news here that I thought would be interesting. I thought Walmart was evil. I found this story. This is from WKRG in Mobile, Alabama. Walmart is going to give cash bonuses to hourly associates, and they're going to hire 150,000 new workers. $300 for full-time hourly workers and $150 for part-time workers. Also, Domino's is hiring 10,000 new workers across the country. I knew this was coming as people are sheltering in place, and they're going to need those deliveries of those pizzas. The pizza man is once again going to be an American hero. Hey, listen, I'm optimistic. I appreciate talking to Anthony, Councilman Anthony Piacentini. Also appreciate his service as a U.S. Marine who fought in combat. The goal that I have and the hope that I have from this is that we will look. I'm on board with the shelter or the everybody stay home for a couple of weeks, but we've got to have a game plan going forward. How are we going to dig ourselves out of this situation? How are we going to open for business again? And so the way that I would do it is I would say, look, these are the benchmarks. The benchmarks are once we are capable of doing testing, we're going to do mandatory testing for every employer that opens back up once a week. Every employee in the company gets tested. And then that once that benchmark gets hit, then what we're going to do is we're going to start letting the young, healthy people go back to work. Then the next benchmark will be once we hit that place where the curve is going downward, we're on the backside of the bell curve, then we're going to let the elderly out as well. And then once we get a little closer on that bottom to the bottom of that bell curve, we're going to let the people with immune systems out. And again, I'm not calling for anything mandatory. I'm just saying that that would be the recommendations that the government should give. And if we do that, we would put ourselves in a situation where we can get back out on top of this. Because as Councilman Piacentini said, we're not going to defeat this. This virus is now with us forever. But we can mitigate it. And we don't shut the economy down for a disease. We have to figure out the best way to save as many lives as possible. Another benchmark that you could put in there is when we got enough beds for X amount, we predict this many people will get sick and this many people will be in need of respirators. Once we hit that benchmark that we have the beds for them and the respirators for them, then we can start to let those folks go back out. And you do it in waves, but you lay that plan out and you tell the people and say, once this benchmark is hit, you're back outside. Once this benchmark is hit, you're back to shopping. Once this benchmark is hit, you're back to work. That optimism, that hope, that plan will help people do better in the period of time we have to be in our homes. It will give us hope. It will help businesses to have a sense of certainty that they'll be able to come back online if they can just make it through this period of time. And then we can start arguing about how we're going to mitigate some of the economic damage that's been done. That's my thoughts on it. Anyway, I encourage you, please, if you haven't shared any of our other podcasts, share this one with your local legislator, someone in local leadership that we can get these. And I'm not claiming that my solutions are the best. I just want people to be talking about this. What is the way forward? And the governor has to know we have his back. If he starts talking about the economy and getting Kentucky back to business, he has to know that regardless of what the media does, we're going to have his back if he starts talking about the economy. Because I'm telling you, if we let this thing crash, we will kill far more people in poverty, destitution, violence, and unrest than this virus ever could imagine. All right, that's it for me. It's the Disruption Zone. I'm on Twitter at Leland Show, on Instagram at Great Lelando, also at Zone Disruption on Twitter, and at The Disruption Zone on Instagram. Please share this podcast with your friends. We're available on Apple Podcasts. That's a free subscription. Same with Google Play. And you can download it and listen to it and get all. If you sign up on Apple Play and Google Play, or Apple Podcasts and Google Play, these episodes get pushed straight to your phone, so you know when a new episode comes out, and you can go there and listen right away. So make that happen, please. Appreciate our co-executive producer and co-host, Cameron Mills. Thank you to Dynamics Productions for their production assistance of this program. It's dxaudio.com. Again, please share and download wherever podcasts are found. I'm Leland Conway, The Disruption Zone.